She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties. So we're going to be at the Annapolis Book Festival at the end of this month. And Valerie, you will be there talking about
your Senator's Wife.
The Senator's Wife. This is your newest book, the two of you, right?
Right.
Yes. And that's the book we're going to actually talk to them about today.
But that book is such a great book. I understand there is a sequel coming out and it's going to be a movie. But
nice.
Just to ask her, how the heck do you write a book with your sister?
The king of Olandinia who wears the shiny hat is Trish. She is the woman that's doing all of this for us. So on three, we're going to say together. We're going to all say thank you, Trish. One, two, three. Thank you, Trish.
With Liv Constantine in the house. Woo. Guys, we have our first writing duo here. And yes, you've heard us talk about this before. And Francesca Zappia is going to freak out because she is so curious about this stuff. Mm-hmm. So we want to thank Lynn and Valerie for joining us today, the writing duo that is Liv Constantine. Hello, our ladies.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
for being here.
Thank you.
Yes. So we want to, yeah. What am I doing with my life? April, help me out here.
So we're going to be at the Annapolis Book Festival at the end of this month. And Valerie, you will be there talking about your...
The Senator's Wife.
This is your newest book, the two of you, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. And that's the book we're going to actually talk to them about today. And
yes.
Guys, read this book.
Like, guys. I did the audiobook.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Did you guys get to pick your narrator, or did the publisher pick it for you?
It was a joint effort between all of us. Yep.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
It was well narrated. Well narrated.
Yes.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the audiobook. Yeah. So we're going to talk to the two of you today because we've read a few books that were co-author duo, however mm-hmm. you want to. What do you prefer?
Co-authors.
Yep. But we've never had a chance to interview co-authors before.
No.
And it's been something that Molly and I have talked about on the podcast many times. Every time this comes up, we want to pick the brain of somebody who does this because we want to know how this works.
Right.
And I'll be honest with you, I don't like any of my siblings well enough to write with them. Like, that's not for me. So,
yeah.
Like, I have three brothers, though. They don't want to write with me. But I'm impressed.
Seriously, very impressed, ladies. So, how about a synopsis so we can dive into it? Yeah? Yeah? All right.
Give us a synopsis.
Synopsis. The Senator's Wife follows four characters through the weirdest post-surgery I've ever seen. I'm joking, guys. I'm kidding. I could not do this to this book. I kid, gang. I kid. I'm an asshole. Sorry. After a horrific accident. I'm so glad I'm doing this in front of you guys. After a horrific accidental shooting, both Sloane and Whit lose their spouses tragically. They, nor anyone else in their circle, could have predicted that 2 years later, they would happily be married. Whit and Sloane are now trying to move on with their lives, but by doing normal things, like having surgery for a bad hip.
It's a normal thing.
Right. It's a normal thing. I mean, I'm due for a hip surgery, and I'm around that age.
Same here.
Along the way, in this wildly unpredictable psychological thriller, we meet Athena, a home health aide, who is up to no good, for sure. Along with Rosemary, Sloane's former mother-in-law, who isn't thrilled about her new marriage and may be a little more nosy than a former mother-in-law should. Look, Bessie, there are so many twists and turns. If I write/say anymore, I'm scared I'm going to spoil this novel for our listeners.
No,
you don't want me to spoil this novel. Mm-mm. You don't. So let's dive into some questions, shall we?
Yeah. Before we start asking questions, Molly, I just want to say, you all that listen to Book Besties, you know, I talk a lot about how I don't like reading mysteries or thrillers. It's just not my thing. Molly keeps making me read it, and I do it.
I even force her to have a whole season of Spooky.
Yeah. We're in the midst of discussing Spooky season as well, and I'm like, I'm vetoing books left and right.
Ladies, do you have a favorite spooky book? No.
I can't say I do. Nope.
Molly always wants to put, like, demon.
What's the one you just vetoed? My
best friend's exorcism.
Oh, I was like, no wonder. Yeah.
It's supposed to be funny.
Oh, okay. Scary.
Look at her face. She does not believe it's going to be funny.
I do not. 100% do not believe. I do not like scary. So, but this isn't a scary book, but this is not my preferred genre. And I have to say, this book was so good. Like, so good. The writing is so strong. We read, experienced authors before, and we've read new authors, and you can often tell when someone is new. They fall into a few pitfalls here and there. You might have a lot of books under your belt, but the craft, you have perfected the craft. Like, I've never read you all before because again, not my preferred genre, but I would 100% pick up one of those.
Yes.
It was amazing.
Yes. And we're going to talk about, Lynn, you have a series on your own, correct?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to talk about that too.
Because you just have all the time to write.
Yeah. Right? I mean, you know, because writing with your sister wasn't enough. You had to add doing it solo.
Exactly.
Because, you know, it's so easy just to write guys.
Molly gets so jealous when we have authors on who are published because she's always like, I can't even finish a book.
I will give you the bird. It's fine.
Molly, don't do that. Don't disrespect our guests.
It's fine. Everybody loves me. I'm cute. book has so many twists and turns. The reader never sees what is coming. Please tell us about your inspiration for this book and how The Senator's Wife came to life.
Sure. So a lot of different things spark our imagination for our book. Sometimes it is a theme, sometimes it's a character. In this case, it was really the twist that started us on the book. We really were just kind of discussing some scenarios, and then we can't say what because it would be a spoiler, but when we thought about what we wanted the twist to be, we were really excited, and we felt like, you know, it would be a nice, a fresh kind of take on an old story. And then, so that's how it started. And then the more we discussed it and refined it, we thought it would really be fun to be in Washington because we haven't, mm-hmm. that's not a setting that we've written in before. Mm-hmm. And Valerie did work in DC many years ago. So she had that background. And even though it's the senator's wife, it's not a political thriller, but there's the backdrop of politics, which is, mm-hmm. you know, can be very glitzy and scandalous and fun to write about. So it was really all of those elements that we brought together. And then also wanting to have a protagonist that had a chronic illness, which I know we're going to probably get into a little bit later, but mm-hmm. that was also part of that story and an important element what we wanted to convey.
Yeah.
Do you always start with your twist and work backwards, or was that something that was different for this one?
I mean, we normally do, although we have a book called The Stranger in the Mirror, and that was written based on just wanting to write a book about amnesia. So we didn't have the twist in that one. But for most of them, we do know what we do kind of start with the twist and go from there. Yeah. Go backwards.
Nice. Well, I think the setting of being DC, it's just so smart. Yeah. And the political aspect of it, because I know it's off the air now, but the show Scandal.
Oh, that's exactly what I thought of really, with this book.
Yeah. Constantly. This reminded me of Scandal. Like, you have the politics. It's in the background. It's not the thing that's driving the story.
Right.
But it's in there enough that it's a look into lives that isn't something we all know, but we're all absolutely certain that they're all shady.
You can see how DC is infecting and invading their lives, though they're trying not to, and they're trying to keep that muddiness, right? Because that's what everybody calls DC, the swamp, that swampiness, that dirt. They're trying to keep that out without like letting it affect their lives. But it's very apparent from the story that there's no way to keep it out.
And
because
I feel
it's a part of their daily lives, right?
And I feel like it's, I lost my train of thought. I just feel like you have people in politics that come from two different socioeconomic backgrounds as well. Some of your characters came from very wealthy, like affluential families. And then you have Whit, who's a senator, but he didn't grow up like that. Right. So he has a totally different perspective on, he's the new money. And I feel like that's something that, like, me as a regular person, I work for city government as a librarian. That's not, it's not the same thing.
Right.
It gives me, like, it's what I feel it must be happening. That must be what's really happening. And I think that's right. What was really good about the story. It's the same thing I get when we read, things about the royals. I'm mm-hmm. always like, oh yeah,
you let the assumptions like move the story. You let the assumptions move the story.
And I think that's a really interesting way to approach it, that you all, started with the twist and then
that is really interesting.
Because I got to tell you, I'm not going to give away any spoilers. I'm just going to say Molly and I read a lot of books. We're doing a book a week for this podcast. I'm almost always reading two books
this month. We had 10 because of festival books.
Molly had 10. April had more because I had to read for work.
Oh, you have work. I forgot about work. How dare you have a job, April?
For me not to figure out a twist, that's a very unusual. Very unusual. And I was like, oh my gosh. So yes, pick this one up.
Well, we're very happy that you didn't guess the twist. That's our mission, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but you see the formula sometimes, you know what I mean? And I didn't see that.
Yes, you do. You do. Mm-hmm. It's true.
But that's very apparent in your writing that you two are so seamless that anybody that picks this book up, not going to know it's a duo. You're not. You're not going to know. I couldn't tell until you look at the back flap and you see sisters and you're like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Good. Cool.
And that's actually one of the things that Molly and I have talked about too. When we read dual authors, co-authors, it's often, oh yeah, you get the writing duos that they write one character and another person writes another character. And it's very obvious, but it isn't with your writing.
Illuminosity, which I can put that episode in the link, guys. That was two writers. And that was very apparent in that science fiction novel that when we were switching point of views, that one person was writing one point of view and one person was writing another perfume. And then we found evidence in interviews saying they exactly did that. So everyone was like, ha-ha!
No, we don't do that.
No, you guys are so seamless. So seamless.
So how does it work when you're writing together?
Well, we talk every day. We have a general outline at the very beginning.
Right? Yeah, really. I love that. Seriously. Good. I'm glad you talked to your sister.
Siblings are terrible.
We work together every day, right? So, we have a really general outline. As Lynn said, we start with a twist. So we know what the big twist is going to be. The others come along the way as we're writing. And because the outline is fairly general, it gives us a lot of freedom. Mm-hmm.
Right.
To really be organic, or as Molly said earlier, let the characters speak to us.
Yes.
Talk to us and tell us where they want to go, what they want to do.
Because sometimes it's not your book, it's theirs.
Well, it is their book, actually. Right. It really is. I mean, they do become real. They become people that we know.
On Book Besties, we talk about characters as real people. Right. That is a thing we do here. Characters are real people to us.
Yeah, they are to us, too. So we talk every morning and we have our assignments for the day, what each of us is going to write, and we write in all the characters. We each
You just pass notes back and forth forever.
We write, we write chapter to chapter. So I will write a chapter, but the good thing is that I can begin writing a chapter. I'd get halfway through and think, oh, I don't really, either I'm bored or I don't know where to go and what to do. And I can send it to Lynn and say, here, I've started it. Would you like to finish this?
Wow. And,
which is so great, because if she sends me something, it's wonderful to look at something that is halfway done instead of a blank piece of paper.
And you're not on the struggle bus alone.
Right.
You're working with somebody, which is... writing is a solitude, lonely event. Staring at a white page alone can take a chunk out of your heart. Yes. It really, truly can. For you to have that partnership is beautiful.
Were you doing this as kids too?
Like, how did you guys stumble across this ability?
How did you start doing this?
Yes, we got to know.
Yeah, we were about 3 years old when we started writing together.
Right. Stop. Bell, lies. Liar.
Well, first of all, there's a big age difference. So we're 14 years apart.
Oh.
So we didn't.
What a great way to bond. Mm-hmm.
Well, the good thing is that really we never had any sibling rivalry because we sort of grew up.
That's why they
separately. And that is, I think that might be a part of the close relationship, and because there's really, it's like there's no jealousy or like, oh, she got this and I didn't get that, or she got to do this or whatever.
But the gap gave you guys a chance to have that communication.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, so we, when did we, the first one was 2000?
Yeah, I mean, we were, we always read and would go to the library every week and get the same book as our mom and our aunt. And we sort of had an informal book club, and we read a lot of stories of family sagas from different nationalities. And so one day I said to Valerie, there really aren't any books about Greek families, and we're Greek. And none of us, we have two brothers in between, and none of us married Greeks. And so, it's a different experience for our children growing up, as well as the fact that our grandparents from Greece, like my children never knew. And I actually only knew my grandmother. Valerie knew more grandparents. So by the time my kids came along, she was long gone. And we wanted to write something that would capture that time of, what it was like growing up. And so it's about two sisters who are Greek, and they're sort of balancing the traditions handed down through their family, as well as, being young girls in America. And that was called Circle Dance. And so that was the first book. We said, let's write it. And we bought a book, how to write and tell a book. So we had no idea.
Writing for Dummies, been there.
Yep.
Back in the way before internet and laptops, and, we would write.
Email.
Get together once a week, trade pages. We were tasked with writing 3 pages a week. That was it, because we were both working full time. Wow. So like a year went by, and we were like, this is taking way too long. So we each took a week off of work. Valerie dragged her huge desktop to my house and set up on a card.
I love this story.
This is the best story.
And we just wrote really from like 8 a.m. till midnight every day for a week.
Wow. And I'm writing that story about you guys. I'm going to write about y'all.
We finished our book, and we didn't have a title, and we went out to have a drink to celebrate. And then we thought of the circle dance, the Greek dance, which is in a circle. And that was how we came up with that. And then we just started querying agents without editing it, without revising. We didn't know.
I mean,
we didn't understand why nobody was kind of picking it up. And eventually we did get a very, very small Greek publisher who did like maybe a 2,500 print run or something like that.
Yes.
And then I had twins at the time. We moved. My kids were 4. And then I moved to Connecticut. We were both in Maryland. So we took a break really for maybe another 10 years or something.
Yeah. Mm. Or more. Right.
And then you just kind of got inspired again.
Yeah. And now I went to a conference in New York called Thriller Fest. And
love Thriller Fest.
Right. Yeah. And I got really inspired, and I said, Val, you need to come with me next year. And I was working on a thriller, which is under Elsie Shaw. And then Valerie said, what would you think of collaborating again? And I said, yeah, that I would love to. So we wrote another book that didn't get published. And then we wrote The Last Mrs. Parrish. And then that kicked off our career.
Blew y'all's up.
And between the two of you, you have 9 novels. Is that correct?
I have seven
novels and 2 novellas.
And 2 novellas.
Total of 9
novels.
Yes. Right.
Wow.
Right.
That's incredible.
Yeah. That's jealous incredible. At all. I'm not green with envy at all.
I'm in total awe because,
it is. It's spectacular. It is so
speaking
hard.
As a librarian, that's a whole shelf.
That is a whole shelf.
Ladies have done it.
I never thought of it that way.
You have a shelf.
You have a full shelf. It's this industry is difficult enough without having trying to find your catch, your niche. You know what I mean? Now you have to add social media into that. You have to add, the touring, you have to add all these things into it. So for you guys to be able to take this beautiful connection, put it on the page and be able to just communicate it and edit it and put it on and somebody understands it. That's spectacular.
We're very blessed. Yeah. I know we've deviated a lot from the questions we sent.
I'll get back to them. We always do.
But that's okay. But I do have one more question. Since you mentioned the Greek heritage, is Athena's character, who's a character in the book, the senator's wife, is Athena's character kind of inspired by your heritage there as well?
She's inspired by our heritage. She's not based on anyone.
Okay.
But her name, her real name,
Athena.
Her name is our grandmother's name, our last name. So we our mother's maiden name. So we that was. That.
Do you guys try to sneak Greek characters into every book? Just for representation.
Well, we did in The Wife Stalker. We have Leo, right? Whose name is our cousin Leo.
I don't know if there was, of course, Circle Dance is all Greek.
Well, in my Elsie Shaw books, Taylor is Greek. Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And that's subconscious, right? I mean, you think about it. So you're not even knowing you're doing it now.
No.
He's brought in the family history.
That was definitely intentional. But it's not in the set, obviously, if it doesn't fit the story. Like, bless Mrs. Parrish doesn't have any Greek characters, and we didn't put any in the sequel. So,
well, now we're going to have to write a third one just so you can.
Right.
No pressure, ladies. It's not like you guys haven't already written a bunch more. It's our listeners know that April and I both suffer from chronic pain. Mm-hmm. I have been very honest over the years about my struggle with my health and my autoimmune disease. Any readers that have dealt with this kind of pain will absolutely be able to tell the writing comes from experience. Mm-hmm. What would you like to share with us about how Sloane's journey came to life? And if you're willing, any personal experiences that, you know, shared her pain journey and helped you guys get there?
Yeah. We have a very, very close relative diagnosed many, many years ago with lupus. Mm-hmm. And felt like we sort of were on that journey with her as she went through the different phases and times when she felt terrific and looked great and times when it was just really difficult for her to even get out of bed, what the different treatments have been over the years and the steroids and so many, you know, all of what the medication does to your body in addition to just the chronic illness and with lupus and with so many autoimmune diseases, you look fine. You can look terrific and like nothing's wrong.
I look healthy.
Right. Yeah. And so that's another thing that we watched her struggle with, you know, to have people look at you like, wow, you look like you feel fine. And really you're in a lot of pain.
Oh yeah.
And so that it all came from her. And
you know, it's a beautiful representation. I had to take breaks. But
I texted Molly when the lupus really became a focal point of this book, because that was one of the original diagnoses that they gave Molly. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, hey, I just want to give you a heads up that this book deals with chronic pain and lupus and the long-term effects of it. And so it could be triggering for you. So take it slow with this one, because I was just really worried. You know, we check in on each other's mental health a lot because books can be triggering.
Yeah.
And like, I don't have an autoimmune disease, but I'm somebody that has been dealing with chronic pain for about 7 years now because I have, it's an issue in my hip. And at this point, I don't even have a real diagnosis. It's been doctor after doctor and procedure after procedure. And being in constant pain, it weighs on your mental health. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated that Sloane's mental health journey was in this book too.
Yeah.
That it wasn't just like the physical pain she's in, but how it breaks down your mind, like how it really weighs on you. And when she's recovering from surgery and she's just in a room, like I've been there where it's just like, I can't do anything. Like I have two young children and my kids are 11 and 7 and I'm not even accessible to them because I'm like, if they touch me right now, I will cry because it hurts.
Yeah.
So I thought that was so well handled and it was apparent that you had seen someone have this journey and that that person was close to you.
The representation in this book is, while difficult for me to read, is spectacular.
Yeah. And the only thing that I ever knew about lupus before Molly, was that Dr. House said it's never lupus. So it's that was all lupus. I knew.
The besties here know, I got diagnosed around 25. So yeah. I've been sick a long time. Like in the novel, she has good days, she has bad days, right? Mm-hmm. And that fluctuation and that roller coaster is very clear. The Sloane's point of view and how Sloane feels in this novel is so clear. And I mean, I thought one of you were battling. That's how real it was. That was how real it was for me.
And we actually had a conversation of, can we ask them this question? Because this might be something
I didn't want to be like, disclose. Hey, I don't want to put your, you know, personal health on blast or anything like that. But I mean, I'm honest about it just because I have nothing to hide. There's no point. Nobody cares. I'm sorry. What was I going to say?
And I also, the stubbornness that Sloane experiences on some of the days where she's just like, I'm going downstairs. That's what's happening today.
I am getting in
that chair. And everyone's like, you can't. She's like, I don't care. I'm doing it anyway. Because that I have those days where I'm like, I'm experiencing this at work right now where I did something that I shouldn't have done and I tweaked my hip a little bit worse. But I was like, I need to do this. Because when you're somebody that's dealing with chronic pain and particularly autoimmune disease, my mother-in-law had an autoimmune disease she battled until her death. Especially when you're diagnosed young, you don't want that to be your identity.
Exactly.
And that becomes your identity.
It does. You did such a good job in this novel with Madeline, the old guy's wife, the one that's always on with Madeline. We all know a fucking Madeline. Madeline's behavior is more common than the supportive behavior.
Really? Whoa. Wow. Oh my gosh. That's horrendous.
Unfortunately, yes.
Jeez.
That is...
I'm not coming for Matt. Don't worry.
No, not my husband. My husband's a fucking rock star. That guy is a champ. He just needs to stop looking at me as a patient sometimes.
Sometimes that happens, yeah.
Yeah. So the title of this novel should be Characters You Cannot Trust.
Yeah.
Set out to make everyone an unreliable narrator, or did that come along as you process of creating this novel?
Well, we always want to try to keep readers kind of tricked, and you know, and we
100% you did it, nailed it.
People are always, especially in this genre, you know, everyone wants to figure out who's good, who's bad, what's the twist, what's going on. So we're always sort of going through this exercise of, well, readers are going to think this, so we have to do that, or if we do that, they're going to think, you know, and we do sort of mental gymnastics to kind of keep it that way. But I think some of the unreliability comes from readers' own assumptions, and we definitely play on that. And they go, oh, okay, I see. I took it, you know, this is what they said. I assumed this, but it was really this. And we really lean much more heavily on that as opposed to
lying.
Yes, exactly. Because I think it's a lot more satisfying when it's kind of like, oh my gosh, it's really clear as day, but I didn't see it because I just assumed and I went down. Yeah.
You're writing, not only are you writing two people writing together, you had four characters' point of views in this, correct? Is that
right? Yeah.
Is it four?
We did.
Yes.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Sloane, Wit, Athena, and Rosemary.
And they all have very distinct voices. The narrator did a great job, but
very good job.
I think the way that you wrote them, like, I just knew that was the character. And I kept picturing with Rosemary, and I know this is probably not a fair assessment, but are either of you fans of Gilmore Girls?
Oh my God, Emily Gilmore, yes.
Rosemary is Emily Gilmore to me. So if you ever do watch the show.
Emily Gilmore. It's the same actress. I pictured the actress.
She's not, Emily Gilmore is not kind. And neither is Rosemary.
I think Rosemary's kind.
I love her. She was my favorite character, by the way.
We loved her too.
I think they both share being nice, but not kind. Yes. I think they do things because they are nice people, but they don't always do them with the kindest motives. Like mm-hmm. Rosemary literally hires somebody to investigate.
Yeah, because she wants to
but make valid. Sure that, I yeah. mean, yeah. If I had those kind of resources, you don't think I wouldn't use
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think right. No, I think Rosemary's very kind. I think she's yeah, I don't
I think Rosemary that. Loves her family and wants to protect right. her family.
I got a different view of her. I felt like she was trying to protect her money. That's what I felt like.
Okay. See? Well, that's what the narrative it's what the reader takes out of it, yeah. right?
I mean, well, she was a little imperious and, you know, and she could be intimidating. I could see, mm-hmm. you know, right. And she wasn't, you know, I mean, we did have this part at the beginning where she wasn't very nice to Whit before mm-hmm. she really, you know, and she really doesn't know whether he's good or, but
don't blame her.
I do think it's much more of a protective, mm-hmm. and.
But you know. I would say that's the same for Emily Gilmore. She's being yeah. protective.
She's mm-hmm. absolutely Emily
the
Gilmore.
The matriarch of the family, right?
She so definitely she's got to be protective. The matriarch. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I liked her too. I liked her too. My favorite character was Sloane. I just mm-hmm. really felt like good. She was just relatable and great.
Yeah.
And I loved her. And I also really liked, and I can't think of her name. Who was Sloane's assistant who had been with her? Not assistant.
Oh, the one at the
sister-in-law?
No, the one, no. The assistant at her foundation.
Anna. Oh, in the... The one in the wheelchair.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That,
I thought
okay.
that was a great inclusion.
That is a great, well. That was a great way to show y'all's attention to detail in this novel, by the way. Because in that, you didn't just write she had this assistant or this person helping her run the foundation. You gave us the whole backstory, why she's mm-hmm. there, how she became a part of Sloane's life, and why she's important to Sloane. Because mm-hmm. we as a reader aren't going to freaking care if
right
mm-hmm. if mm-hmm. we don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
And that would have been a very easy character to just, she's mm-hmm. just the assistant.
Well, it was more yeah. of a window into Sloane, too.
Yes, yeah. because of who she was, right?
Yes.
Right. Because right. Sloane couldn't, even if Sloane is in the worst pain of her life, Sloane is still going to give you the shirt off her back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then she had the housekeeper or cook, I can't remember, who had been with her for like decades.
Oh, yeah. Doris. And then they, Doris. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Doris. Molly texted me, Doris is the only person in this novel that I like right now.
The only one I trust. Oh, yeah, I trust in this novel. And and at the end of that novel, I still only trust Doris, by the way. And I'm not a fan of you two either.
You're not. Who are you not a fan of?
Y'all. I'm just saying. If I read any more of your novels like this, I'm coming for y'all next. No.
normally, I mean, I thought it was great. Like, I would definitely read it.
Oh, I'm reading y'all again. This was great. Good.
Put them back on pod, Molly. I'll do it.
Yeah. Yes, I will. I will drag all of you back.
They have a whole shelf at the library.
I know. Normally, we do spoilers here on Book Besties. We tell you guys all the tea. We break it down for you guys. We do all the things. But since this is a new release and we are doing this for the festival, we're not going to do this week. Sorry, gang. Mm-hmm. Lynn, Valerie, you both have a very distinct point of view in this novel. What was it like for you both to jump from character to character, especially being that it's a writing duo? I can see being one person being able to do that, but how are both of you managing this? Because it is hard.
Right. Yeah. Well, jumping from one character to another, I don't think we've ever really felt like that was a difficult thing to do, because it is broken down. Right. I mean, each chapter is that mm-hmm. character. So mm-hmm. you know which character you're writing. And I think when you write from an omniscient point of view,
mm-hmm.
that might be a little more difficult, where you're in the head of everybody all the mm-hmm. time. But when you're doing a chapter, you're just in the head of one person. Mm-hmm. And the thing also that we do, and you just to hearken back to when you were talking about mm-hmm. it being sounding seamless, mm-hmm. is that we edit each other's work each day. So we give ourselves the assignments in the morning, but in the afternoon, I send my work to Lynn and Lynn sends her work to me. And it is with the complete authority to go ahead, make suggestions, change things, edit, add, whatever. So there are times that there could be a sentence where half of the sentence is mine and the other half is Lynn's.
Wow.
Or, we write in, you know, put X's where words might go in, or a description, or and so
hey, I don't want, I don't know what to put here.
Yeah.
Give me something because my brain sucks.
Exactly. but I don't really feel, I don't know, do you, Lynn, that going back and forth between the characters is...
No, because it's like our own stories, right? Right, and we do, we spend a lot of time before we even begin writing to really flesh our characters out. And so we know them. And as and we get to know them more as we are writing. So, yeah, I find it more interesting. It's, I think it's a lot harder to stay in one point of view for a whole novel.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. Well, so you guys are...
Did you feel... Sorry, Molly. Was there one character that you found easier to write?
I feel like I warmed up the most to Rosemary. I mean, Rosemary came more fully formed. And Sloane was more difficult because
she was difficult.
You know, as just like you were saying before, we did not want her to be defined by her illness, and we didn't want to show her. We wanted to be able to show her vulnerability, but also her strength. And we needed to make sure that there were opportunities for that to be seen. And so we had, you know, we really wrote this book. This is the longest book. Usually it takes a year to write a book. It took us 2 years to write this book.
And wow. I was getting at that next.
About three different times. And
we made a lot of changes.
Right.
Really?
And the primary reason was initially was the difficulty with Sloane, and that, you know, she was coming across in the early drafts as just down a lot and, you know, out of commission. And we know you couldn't, you, in order to really care about her, you needed to know her, and you couldn't know her in that way. So,
right.
But once we were able to get past that, then she did come alive, and we were very happy with the way she turned out, but that was the most challenging character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my question was, I was going to ask about how long it takes you guys, because it is a process being that you guys are writing together. So this book took you 2 years?
Yes.
So do you guys set out with a timeline, or do you just go, hey, we're going to sit down, we're going to write an outline and go from there?
We usually have a deadline.
With no, that's
a contract,
nice.
Right.
That's beautiful money.
Right. But we didn't with this.
So you kind of got to.
Yeah. So
it's
great. We just.
So who was the first character then that spoke to you guys? Who was the first character that sparked this novel?
Well, the spark was Sloane, wouldn't you say?
And then very quickly after Athena.
Yes. And then came Rosemary, of course, who
we
both loved.
Rosemary
It's not that I didn't like her. I feel like I need to defend myself. It's not that I didn't like her. I feel like she's in people's business.
So since we're talking about things that April hates, this is not her genre. We've talked about that a lot this week, today, but this is y'all's comfort zone. Is Thriller Fest how you guys figured it out, or how did you guys find this being your comfort zone? How did you guys figure this out? Because this is wild. Two siblings just being like, yeah, we're going to write murder books.
No, and our first book was The Last Mrs. Parrish, and our sister-in-law said, this is a thriller without a murder. No one died in that book. And we just thought it was women's fiction. And when we got our agent, she's the one who said, this is a psychological thriller. It crosses both. It's both. And so we were fortunate enough that that book was chosen by Reese Witherspoon as a pick, and
awesome.
It did really well. And our publisher was kind of like, all right, this is what you write.
This is your genre.
Oh yeah.
Hello.
Stay in your lane and don't move.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly right.
Don't put a foot out of line. Don't even think about romance because nobody will want you.
Yeah.
And then we did graduate to murder in the second book. So
good. I'm glad you guys figured out how to kill somebody.
It's gotta always wrap it place up. To get to eventually, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, in your genre, you have to eventually kill somebody.
Right.
I mean, but this book, and I don't think this is a spoiler because it's the very first chapter, this book starts with a murder.
Yeah.
Like, it's very quick.
I mean, call it a murder.
It's an accidental shooting.
It's, I mean,
to me,
we're going to use air quotes, accidents.
So the senator's wife, that set it up for me that this story was going to be about the wife of a senator. So I guess you have Sloane, who is a wife of two senators, a deceased senator who dies in our first chapter, and then her current senator husband. But for me, the senator's wife, when I started that, I was like, oh, the senator's wife's about to kill somebody. Like, that's what's happening right now. Like, wow.
And it's funny because when we were looking at covers, there were some very, and we love our cover. And
it's a gorgeous cover.
Beautiful.
We're beautiful, but it was a woman that sort of looked a little sketchy, right?
Shading, beautiful.
But we're like, no, because then it is good. People will.
But you guys aren't women walking away. That's historical fiction.
You know, they're going to think that she is a bad person, and that's not what it was about.
So. Well, and cover appeal is a massive part of selling your novel.
It is, yes.
Mm-hmm. Is
and the title.
Yep.
I mean, one of the titles that we had thought we juggled around with was The Senator's Widow.
Oh.
Right.
But that's also sending your reader into that headspace.
Yep. It would have been different.
It would have been predetermined. Oh, we're sad for Sloane.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't want to go in starting pity for Sloane.
Yeah. And even her lupus diagnosis is discussed pretty early in the book, but I didn't have pity for her. This woman moved on from the loss, tragic loss of her husband. She found love again. I was so happy for her. And then I
never trusted Whit. I'm not going to lie, but I don't trust a lot of men. So.
I didn't trust any of them. I was pretty sure Sloane
again,
was
the title of the novel should be People You Do Not Trust.
By Liv Constantine.
By Liv Constantine.
People You Do Not Trust. We'll keep that title in mind.
Yeah. Oh no, I get a thank you. I get acknowledgement if you use it. You hear me?
I get an acknowledgement. I have a novella coming out later this year called Everyone's a Liar. So
I love it.
That's good.
I'm here for it. Nice. Well, now I got to add it to my TBR. When's that coming
Everyone's
out?
Everyone's a liar.
I think
Everyone's a liar because it's true.
Yeah.
Ladies.
November, is that what she said?
I think, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I don't have an exact publication.
Well, we'll have, we at the end of the episode, we put all the links in, all the stuff. So
great. We'll link to your website.
Yeah, we'll link to your website at the end.
Yeah.
Ladies, you have written 7 novels and 2 novellas together. Just freaking wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's, as April has said, neither of us can tolerate our siblings that long.
Nope.
So how do you guys balance the work-sibling relationship? How do you guys keep that separate? Because I don't know if I could keep not calling my sister a butthead every time I saw her. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't work related, you know, like, please share your secrets.
Well, if we share our secrets, they won't be secrets.
Right. Valid. Fine. Is it a good couple counselor?
It's okay for you to write thrillers that are confusing, but we're going to need some answers.
Yeah. Is it a good couples counselor? Is that what it is? Do you guys just have a counselor on call?
Gosh. Like, it seems really easy, doesn't it? I mean, right.
You know,
y'all are making it sound real easy.
Well, we don't call each other names. We never have.
Valid. Right. Nice.
Yeah.
It's because we like each other. That's really nice.
Yeah. We've always been best friends and close. And so, you know, it's not any different, right?
Yeah. We have, and you know what? I think another thing that really is something special is that we both have the same sense of humor, which can be.
Well, that pretty, helps.
You know, lots of sarcasm and
yes.
Whatever. There's definitely some places in this book that I
Yes, there is. You can feel your humor in there. There mm-hmm. is humor mm-hmm. in your novel. You mm-hmm. can read the sarcasm. As mm-hmm. someone who is born sarcastic, yes. Lynn, my friend, you write under another name because writing with your sister isn't enough work. you have a series called Jack Logan. And you write under the name LC Shaw. So this, from glimpsing of your website, this looks like my husband's vibe, which I'm going to force him to read because he loves this kind of stuff. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Jack London and how you dove into solo?
Sure. Jack Logan.
Nice.
Jack London's a different person, Molly.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to Google it now because I don't know who that is.
He's a writer. Right.
He's a writer.
Right.
Yeah. I'm done. I'm so glad I'm hosting this. Sorry, go ahead.
is much, it is, you're right. I mean, it's not aimed for necessarily just for men, but it's definitely more testosterone driven than what Valerie and I write together. It's much more thriller, a lot more higher body count, mm-hmm. more action. But yeah. It's really it's a conspiracy thriller, and there is romance in it because it's two people. It's Jack and Taylor, his long lost love. She's the half Greek, and they're both journalists. Nice. And he's rescuing her as her husband's murdered, and they're on the run trying to figure out who's after them. So there's two of them right now. I need to write a third. I'm not sure when that's going to happen. But what I'm really trying to do is write a pilot. I've written a pilot. I'm trying to see if I can get somebody to pick that up and produce it.
That's amazing.
I mean, nothing's happened yet, but that's my hope.
I would watch that.
Yeah, that's what I would
You
like.
Said, you had me going. As soon as you said romance, I was like, hold up. And then they're journalists? What? Let me get into this. Yeah,
they're kind of like star-crossed lovers. Like, she's really mad at him, but she has no choice but to go with him. And there's a lot of history between them. They were like, they used to live next to each other. And there, you know, there's a little bit of a supernatural element in it. So it's people compare it to the Da Vinci Code, which I've never read. So
don't read it. It's all.
It does just make your brain hurt.
Well, no, it's riddled with inaccuracies.
So that's that. And it's L.C. Shaw because the publisher didn't want it to be Lynn Constantine, too similar to Liv.
Too similar to Liv.
People wouldn't get confused. Yeah.
And that makes sense. I get it.
So it's L.C. like initials. Like
Lynn Constantine and then Shaw. That's
L dot C.
Oh, I was picturing Elsie, like L
E
L S I E.
Yeah,
L C.
Oh, that makes sense. That sounds good.
So is the pilot based off the book?
Yeah.
Is the pilot you're working on based off the book, Lynn?
Yes. Yeah.
That's exciting, dude.
Yeah.
That's so exciting. Writing scripts is so much harder than writing novels.
It's so different. It is.
It's so different. Yeah. I took my degrees in creative writing and I took one screenplay class and I was like, no, thank you. Formatting hurts.
I know. And then you leave it for a couple months and you have to teach yourself all over again.
Yes. Now. I have a couple books on it, but it's hard and I'm dyslexic. So I'm going to stick to just putting words on a word sheet. There are two questions I like to ask other authors when they're on. The first is, what is the best writing advice you've ever gotten from another writer?
Okay.
From another writer?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm thinking, this is probably from a writer. The best writing advice I've ever gotten was when I was querying either the Logan stuff or when Val and I were querying the first book, and that was just write the next book. Don't get stuck on the book that you're trying to pitch. Like if nothing's happening, and I'm really, you know, glad because we hadn't written the last Mrs. Parrish. You know, we'd still be sending out query letters on that other book, right? All these years later. So that I think is really good advice.
That's good. That is really good advice because you can't be stagnant. You can't be stuck in that lane. You'll just keep waiting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of writers who'll say they've had 7 books in a drawer, right? And it was the 8th book that got, you know, so I think that's a lot of people just kind of get stuck in the same project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you do appearances, what's the advice you give new writers?
Same thing.
Very similar.
It's really about perseverance, I think, really. I mean, as you said earlier, it's a tough business. It's hard to break into.
It is.
There were just a lot of years, a lot of rejection. And I just always would say when we're published, you have to have that. And I just knew I was never going to quit. I didn't know when
you have to have that mindset.
You know, that's that kind of, I feel if you want to make it, you have to have that kind of a commitment to it.
I think one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was, don't wait for your muse to show up. Mm-hmm. That whole thing of sitting down and like waiting for inspiration, or say, oh, I have writer's block. It's just sit in that chair and just start writing. And even if you write a whole page of garbage, just keep writing and writing and writing. Mm-hmm. And eventually it's going to happen.
because if you put trash on the page,
you can't edit a blank page. So
nope. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And trash on a page is better than nothing on a page.
That's right.
Because staring at a white page will make your brain melt.
Yes.
Without giving away trade secrets. Okay, we've already talked about this. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've been fascinated with the dual writing since Good Omens in middle school, and those two wrote back and forth, but we've really already talked about this. So I'm going to move on. Mm-hmm. In June, you two have a new release coming. The next Mrs. Parrish is the second novel in its series, and it's a Reese Witherspoon book club, which is super freaking cool. We'd love to hear about this book, and please feel free to share anything about touring dates, promote. This is your time to promote everything, guys.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we're very excited. It's the sequel, but it is also okay to read as a standalone. There's enough information in there that if you haven't read the last Mrs. Parrish, you can read the next Mrs. Parrish. It's really now sort of turning into a series because we have the first shot, which is a novella prequel to the last Mrs. Parrish, which is about 100-some page. Yeah, and that's Amber's backstory. Nice. But we bring a character from that book into this one. So it's three women, Daphne, Amber, and a new woman, Daisy Ann, their points of view, and she's from Texas. So we have a whole new world that we're showing in the book. And there's just a lot of double crossing and triple crossing and twists and turns. And
I love it.
We've been really kind of apprehensive about how it's going to be received because we have a lot of people who really love the first book. And so far, we've been hugely relieved and gratified to see that the early reviews have been really good and people are loving the book. So it comes out June 18th and we'll be doing a tour, which is on our website. And we're also on Instagram, Facebook. We have a Facebook group where we do some special giveaways if people join that.
We'll put the links in the next thing, guys.
Yeah, we'll put the links below. So yeah. If you're looking for it.
Yeah.
Great.
We love to, we love to connect with readers, especially on Instagram. And we also have a newsletter, which we do giveaways. And what we're running right now is over the next few months, we'll be choosing 4 people out of the newsletter each month to do a book club Zoom with us on the new book.
Cool. Fun.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So next is my last question is about Annapolis, which is in a few weeks. So can you tell us about your panel?
Sure. So this is the Annapolis Book Festival, and it's at the Key School, at their beautiful, beautiful campus. This is their 21st year. 21 years they've been doing this. Yep. They do a great job. The name of my panel is Edge of Your Seat Thrillers with a Female Twist.
Nice.
Which that's kind of, yes, nice twist, right?
Because that isn't what you think of when you think of the thriller genre.
That's true.
Right. I like that because we actually read another thriller written by a woman where the main character was, it's a man and a woman. And it's also like very twisty.
With the female, right? Good.
Yeah. So that's cool. Keep going. Sorry. Great.
No, that's okay. So that's at 1:00. That's from 1 to 2, I think. And it's, I'll be with Peter Blauner and who is the E.A. Amor.
Oh, nice.
So that will be, that should be fun. Yeah.
That will be fun.
But it's a great festival. There are tons of used books that they sell. There are children's activities. There's food, entertainment.
Oh, we.
So 10 to 5 on the 27th.
Yes,
be there. The 27th.
And tagged on to the end of this episode, there's going to be some more of our interview with Trish, who is the chair of the Annapolis Book Festival. So looking for more information, stick around at the end of this episode and we'll have some more for you.
Super. Mm-hmm. That's great.
We're excited to be back. It's our second year there as well. We were there last year and we were the first podcast that the Annapolis Book Festival had. And this year they actually have a second one as well. But we were the originals. So
we are the preferred podcast of the Annapolis Book Festival.
Great. I don't know that that's true, but we want to be.
I'm saying it. I'm putting it into the world.
You got to say it. Got to put it out there.
Manifesting it.
Such a blast. Yes. The school is so beautiful. And the book sale is so worth it. Like just
so worth it.
I was so disappointed because we had finished filming and then most of like the books
were gone.
Oh no.
You have to take a break or.
Yeah. We filmed back to back last year. I think we started at, what time did we start?
8:39. It was
something
early.
Like that. Yeah. And we were done at 3 and we didn't stop.
And we just kept going.
built in breaks, but then we found that we talked a lot.
We did. A smidge.
Bet you had fun.
Yeah, oh, I mean, that's amazing. The point. It was amazing. And we're going to have a blast next year.
It's such a big deal for me to meet writers, like, and getting to be a part of this podcast where I get to do this virtually, and then go to Annapolis Book Festival and meet authors in person. Like, I grew up idolizing that is yeah. who is famous to me is authors. Yeah. And I'm a librarian too. Now.
Yeah.
And that's still the way it is. Actually, this weekend I'm hosting an author at an event for work.
Cece?
Yeah. And I love her. I'm just like, it's incredible that I get to do this because, like, you all are the heroes for me. Like, this is my thing, you know?
It's your colleagues. I mean, I'm not published yet, but you guys see the world in writing like I do. And so it's really nice to be able to conversate. Is that a word?
Not a word.
We're going to pretend it is. We're going to conversate about this.
Have a conversation.
No, conversate. Anyways. And just like get into the whole nuts and bolts of it. Because I really thought, like, based off of your writing, I thought y'all were pantsers. And just going back and forth because they are not. This is so structured. You guys are so structured. It's spectacular. It's spectacular because Good Omens started out as letters back and forth between two friends. So I was like, oh, that's how people write. They just tell each other stuff. And it works.
So, you know, everybody has a different style and whatever works for you, right?
It's great. So
yeah,
we are so grateful you guys took the time to spend with us today.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting us. Thank you.
This was amazing.
You
know,
you guys are always welcome back. Bother Thank us. You. We'll bother you.
Yeah. You want to take a break from your tour and come chat with us this summer? We'll do it. Okay. That'd be fine.
Just let us know. Until next time, besties. Wait. Do we have anything for the out? Okay. We're heading out.
We got next week.
Next week.
We are at Annapolis Book Festival next week.
I'll see you then.
So check social media for what we're doing in May, because apparently April has.
We
lost
don't know what we're
mind.
Doing with our lives. I've only been doing this for 6 seasons. We're totally not new at this.
Someday we'll get our lives together. But we have May episodes on social media. They're probably on social media already now. If
they are
got her life together.
Future Eagles got this.
And in June we will have 3 episodes and we'll do Pride reads again for June. Mm-hmm. And then we will take our summer break while April enters her busy season at work. And I don't know what Molly does.
I'm
going
to write.
With her kids.
No, she's going to write. They're gross. Kids are the worst.
I love your kids.
I love my kids too, but they're teenagers. They're mean.
Okay, well.
Teenagers are the worst. Do you not? You'll see, April.
You're the worst, Molly.
I know I am. Anyway. Where do you think they got it from?
Anyway, and then we'll take a break and we'll be back in September. So yes, that's it. So thank you again so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Take care. We'll see you next time, besties. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties with special guest authors Liv Constantine. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was The Senator's Wife by Liv Constantine. Your book besties are Molly Big and April Watkins. Editing by Thomas Watkins and music is Sleep Sweetly by Prigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.